This is Talking Dirty, Get Gardening's podcast for plant lovers. The video version is available on our Get Gardening YouTube channel, so you can head over there if you want to see our ugly mugs, and there are pictures of the plants there as well. There are full plant lists on our Twitter and Instagram at Get Gardening Now, so go check those out. But without further ado, let's start talking dirty.
So this is a golden-leaved rosemary that I found many, many years ago.
It's now salvia, I believe, isn't it?
It's been moved into salvia, yes.
Yeah, okay. There's a botanist buggering about.
My label says salvia on one side and rosmarinus on the other side. But if we just have a little digression on that point, a lot of the name changes are being based on the analysis of the DNA of plants. But in my opinion, what they're doing is they're doing only a partial analysis. So when they change the name because they find something that looks like something else or is very similar, they will change the name. But I think that you can only really work out what things are when the full DNA sequence has been done. And the full DNA sequence has been fully compared with all the other plants. And so suddenly jumping in and saying, well, this plant's the same as this. Now, I will, to get political here, there's a geranium called Roseanne, and there's one called Jolly Bee.
Yeah.
They arose in Holland and one arose probably in the UK. And they were said to be the same. And when you look at the flowers, they're the same. When you look at the habit and the growth of the two different plants, they are completely different. And I have a friend who's got a row of Jolly Bee and a row of Roseanne, okay? And they're not the same. When they did the DNA analysis of these two plants, they were found to be the same. And the reason they were found to be the same was because when you do a partial analysis and you cut the DNA in certain places, if, say, you cut the DNA in 20 places and those 20 places are the same, then you assume that those two plants are the same. But you didn't cut it in 21 places. And the 21st place could be substantially different. And this is what I'm saying. When you do a full DNA sequence and compare a full sequence with a full sequence, only then can you be sure that the name. So at the moment, with the name changes that are going on, I'm kind of just like, okay, you know, we will see. Hopefully I live long enough to see that a lot of these names will just go back again to where they were. Okay, but never mind. Golden rosemary. So lovely golden foliage, really quite a good blue flower, as you can see here. And this, for me, I've been growing this continuously, but certainly for the last 10 years, it's completely hardy. So the name that was going to be used was Goldie. And I'm getting to a certain point where I feel, and you'll probably cut this out, where I feel I am not getting enough recognition for what I do. And I've rechristened this and I'm now selling it as Joe's Goldie. And I really, as a plantsman, one of the things I really don't want to do, and I've always been educated by other plantsmen not to do, is to be egotistical and to name things for yourself. So you really will not find many plants called Monk Silver or Joe's this or Joe's that or Joe's the other. But I'm afraid as time has gone by, I'm naming more and more things with my name or the nursery name in, because go on.
In case I don't cut this out. What I think is good about that is that actually as gardeners, you care about who bred something. You care about where it came from. Yeah. And you want to know that it's from East Lambrook Manor or, you know, wherever at Care Hayes, wherever it might have come from. You kind of want to know.
You can run out of names that are so you may end up with a series that's got a connection back to Monk Silver. I mean, this goes back to snowdrops, which obviously was one of my first passions. When I first started acquiring snowdrops from collectors, you would get the snowdrop with its history. So you wouldn't just get the plant, you'd get the whole history of the plant. So you'd see, you get a plant, you say, this is Lady Beatrix Stanley. She was a good friend of Bowles. This plant came from Elizabeth Parker Jarvis. Elizabeth Parker Jarvis was the daughter of Dick Trotter. Dick Trotter was a really good friend of Bowles. Bowles was actually a very good friend of Henry Harper Crewe. And so you go back through the plantsman into the Victorian period with every plant. When you go to a garden centre and you buy a plant, you have got no idea who raised it, where it came from, any history. You look at the name and you see it's called Peg Sharples and you think, who is Peg Sharples? who is Mary Mottram? Who is, you know, any number of people that plants are named for? We just don't know anymore. And there was a lady called Alex Pankhurst who wrote a little book about people and plants, and trying to explain at least who some of the people were. But it doesn't, it was a book with very, very limited scope. There needs to be a bigger list of who these people are, because these people were fascinating people who cared and loved for their plants and passed their plants on to other people. And this is why we all enjoy and grow them today, because of these
and
people.
It passes on. You just said Harper Crewe, and I immediately thought, the wonderful double yellow wallflower.
Yes, exactly. Back to wallflowers. Yeah. So that plant was named for him. And when you look at the Erysimum, Henry Harper Crewe, or was Harper Crewe, Erysimum Harper Crewe, it's a wild type Erysimum. It's a wild type one. It's like the squinny ones that were on your cathedral wall.
Yeah.
It's not a big, blousy, modern wallflower. It's small and delicate and refined and restrained. And, you know, it's got all those really nice characters. And we can see it's a really old plant. Henry Harper Crewe was one of the most influential plants people of his time, which was the mid to late Victorian period. How many people actually know about him at all? You know, how many people know his name was Henry?
Yeah, I'm fully behind you with what you're saying about your plants and the plants that you produce, because, I mean, you know, if it's got Monk Silver or Joe Sharman attached to it, I'm immediately going to assume that it's got a certain quality about it, because I know you and I know what you do and I know how you produce your plants. And exactly. I think that is what you want to achieve.
I mean, the thing is that people, a lot of people now know that I won't name rubbish. That plant, I have got to have tried to kill it in every possible way before I try and sell it to you. And every time as we said earlier, I try and kill it. And every time I don't kill it, that's a learning process. And if I am satisfied that I can't kill it, then I'm very satisfied that if I sell it to you, then you definitely won't kill it. And it's about testing and proving and, you know, making sure that what you sell is good. Now, I do admit I do sell some really wild and wonderful, funky little plants that will instantly die on you. I do. But in general, I try not to. I try and name really good, stable, strong plants.
Lovely.
So that's Rosemary, Rosmarinus, Joe's Goldie. All right, what should we do now? Should we do one of my favourites?
Yes, let's do one of my favourites.
So this time of year, this is called Smilacina racemosa. It's had a name change to Myanthemum racemosum. My labels do say that, one on one side and one on the other. And I absolutely love this plant. I've been growing this plant for a very long time. The scent is unbelievable. And I have this planted on the path that I walk every day. And as I'm walking around on this path, I can smell this. And in the winter, on the same path, I have Sarcococca. So I'm walking through and I'm smelling this as I'm walking through. I also have Lanisa caprifolium. Do you know, listen, an incredible scent. So yeah. I have these scented plants on my path that I walk every day, and I absolutely love it. It's a woodlander. It prefers slightly damper conditions than I've got. It will be, you can see how tall it gets in a pot. Okay, that gives you some idea. But in the ground, it will be probably at least half as high again. It will have all the flowers. So it's related to Solomon's seal. You can probably see there's an element of Solomon's seal in it. But instead of Solomon's seal, the flowers being strung along the stems, all the flowers are at the end in this particular plant. And you do get berries on the end, and you can grow it from seed from the berries that are on the top. You can divide them. Okay, so you can divide them at the bottom, but they are very finicky. And if you go too small, they really will not love you. So when you divide them, you've got to do big pieces. And what that means is that when I sell this plant, it has to be relatively expensive, because I've got to divide this into big chunks. So when I look at this thing here, you think there's loads of shoots, I might get, you know, 20 out of it. But I would tell you, no, I probably only get 3 or possibly 4 out of it. But it is really one of my favourite plants, certainly this time of year.
It's quite interesting, Joe, because when you hold the pot up to the camera, you can actually see where the plant possibly wants to be divided. And I can see 3 plants there. Yeah. I can't see 4, but I can see 3.
Yeah. So when you're dividing, often when I'm dividing a plant, I'll be doing this.
Yeah.
And I'll be testing it. I'll be working out where it's going to go. And
it's pressure.
You don't see my fingers going into the compost. I'm just kind of like this, and I'm feeling how it's going to break, even without breaking it. And it's just one of those things you learn how to do, and you can then judge how many plants you're going to get out of it. People will say, I'll pick up a plant and I'll be doing this for a bit, and
wiggling it,
and people think, well, what on earth are you doing? Well, I'm finding out where it's going to go, basically. And then once I found out where it's going to go, then I can go in with the knife, or I can go in with the bread knife, or I can get in and just break it. But if you just pick up a plant at random and break it, you're not breaking along its natural lines. You've got to go with the plant. The plant is teaching you, telling you something. You've got to go with it.
Yeah.
Is that what you found as well, Alan?
I have indeed.
Yeah.
Good.
There's a little blue thing down
there. Yeah, right. Thordis is big on little blue things. Right. So this is Omphalodes nitida. So the common name is blue-eyed Mary. It's fairly closely related to forget-me-not, but in this particular case, it's a perennial. So forget-me-nots are generally annual. This is a perennial, evergreen, lovely glossy leaves at the bottom, and it's called Omphalodes nitida. Omphalodes nitida, and the word nitida means shining. So when you look at the leaves, they're slightly shiny. I would say it was a short-lived perennial, so maybe 3 or 4 years if you're lucky. Lovely dome of leaves, even when there's no flowers, and it will seed around. Generally, it's a light shade preferred, but it will occasionally seed itself into the sun, and then it will do its thing in the sun without any problem. Very, very tolerant, very hardy, very easy to grow, and just a beautiful blue. And the blue can be, if I push all the flowers together, you can see just, if it's a bit denser, you can see how blue they are. They're a really intense blue.
And set off so nicely by those pinky stems.
By the pinky stems. And there are one or two other Omphalodes around. There's Omphalodes verna, which is a perennial that runs and creeps with either dark blue, pale blue, or white flowers. And there's another Omphalodes called Lucilli, which is an annual one. But generally, I want to grow the perennial ones. And this is, it's a really popular plant, and deservedly so. Absolutely fantastic thing. So that's Omphalodes nitida.
I like that.
We haven't talked about bluebells, have we? Should we talk about bluebells?
Let's do that.
Let's do bluebells.
I'm confused.
So here we are. Here we are. It's bluebell time. As you were saying, tulips, bluebells, and roses all at the same time, which is just madness.
Crazy.
So this is a little dwarf rose. It's one of the old China roses. It's called Rosa crossodorata semper florens. And semper florens means ever flowering. So semper florens, ever flowering. It's really, with me, the highest I've ever had is about 4 foot. So it's a dwarf thing. And it just, when it starts flowering, it just flowers and flowers and flowers and goes all the way through. So for me, it's probably, should we say, April till October, no problem whatsoever. And it builds itself up into a very neat little bush. So it's really good. In that respect, the flowers necessarily last that long, but then you get lots of them, so it doesn't really matter. But it is, fascinating that it's, now flowering at bluebell and tulip time. It's a little bit earlier than it used to be. So that's.
And they are lovely because they're just these little traditional cabbagey roses.
Yeah, so the
little,
the China roses, because Alan grow you grow Mutabilis, don't you?
Yeah.
And then Crimson Bengal.
Yeah,
and then Parsons Pink China and Semper Florens, and these four roses we call the China roses, and they are the ancestors of nearly all of the modern hybrid teas. They're the ancestors of many of our other roses, because they were bred with everything. They were bred with climbers, they were bred with ramblers, they were bred with the Gallicas. Anything they could cross these four roses with, they did. And so certainly I would say probably not Semper Florens so much as Mutabilis, because Mutabilis, the color changing you from Mutabilis, you see in so many modern roses, don't you, in things like Peace and Masquerade, and there's a whole series of roses with this color changing which all comes from Mutabilis. And we now know where some of these plants came from. So yes, we say China, but they didn't actually come from China. They may have come from China originally, but they hopped. And they did some island hopping, like a lot of rich people like to do, but these aren't rich roses. And a lot of them ended up in Bermuda. And in Bermuda, the climate is particularly good for this group of roses. And they start to seed around and do their own thing. And there's a whole series of roses which are originated in Bermuda, all of which have got this China blood. And there was an article recently in The Plantsman all about these roses. And one or two more of them have finally managed to hop away from Bermuda and are coming into our gardens. And one of them is called Bermuda's Yellow. And I think, I don't know whether you, have you sold Bermuda's Yellow, Alan?
No.
No?
No.
So it's very pale yellow, almost to white, with the same kind of habit as Semperflorens. And that's getting around now. People have got that one. There's also the possibility of mutations and spores from plants like Mutabilis. And I've got one branch, and we'll have to see if it's worked or not, where the flowers went yellow. So they're as big as Mutabilis, but they're just yellow. You've had that. Did you manage to propagate them?
No, I didn't try.
You didn't try.
So I didn't really think it was worthy of propagation, to be quite honest.
You know, experiment. That's the whole business. So I've got one going, and if you see one on yours, Alan, you better text me, and I will dash up and take some cuttings of it. Because you never know. I mean, if Crimson Bengal sported a double, or Crimson Bengal sported, a pink variety, it would be such a good garden plant. Rosa Crimson Bengal is such a good plant. And in fact, Mutabilis can get a bit big, can't it, given time?
Well, I've got Crimson Bengal, which I grow from cuttings on the front of my house.
Yeah.
And it's 15 feet tall.
Yeah, they can do.
That is on with the south wall.
Absolutely, they can do that. But if I, the ones I'm doing, I grow freestanding, and they will never get that big because they tend to get too big, and then they fall over, and then I cut a bit off because it's got too big.
Yeah.
But but your Mutabilis is quite big as well, isn't it? It was in the sunken garden. Is that right?
No, it's in the one I took the one out in the sunken garden. I've got one out near the sitting out area for the cafe.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is on a fence.
Given time, they can get big. But the one I showed you, Semperflorens, never gets that big. It's always a little tiny thing, like this. Okay.
Yep.
And it's sometimes the other name for it is Miss Wilmot's Double Crimson China, because she was the person who promoted it and handed it around to people. So it's got a name for her, but it already had a name. So that the Miss Wilmot's Double Crimson can't stay as a name because it was already named in Latin.
Talking of double crimson things.
Oh, yeah. This is another little mini rant. Many, many years ago, I created fully double dark red astrantias. So I've been maintaining and growing fully double dark red astrantias for many, many years. And I have been trying to get a big company to grow this plant for me, and I have singularly failed. You've got things going around like Moulin Rouge, which is being micropropagated and sold in large numbers. It's a single dark red. Great. Would you like a double dark red?
Yeah.
Because they exist. They exist, and I want somebody to come to me and propagate them and promote them and give them my name. And I'm just getting fed up with this plant. I've got dozens of them. But when you're trying to get plant breeders' rights on something, you can't sell them. You have to hang on to them. You can't name them. You can't even put them on a podcast. So they exist. If you want it, like and subscribe.
That is lovely. It's a fabulous thing.
But the leaf's a good colour.
Yeah, beautiful dark leaf as well.
Amazing.
I can't believe it.
All right, so let's have something that's peaceful. And serene and white. And this is Veronica Orientalis Purity. I was given this many, many years ago by a customer without a name. And she said it's new, and I think you're the right person to have it. Thank you very much. And it's got lovely, fresh green leaves. It's, I suppose, shall we say, 20, 25 centimetres tall. Very long in flower. A beautiful, beautiful clean white. And I think it's all round as a good garden plant. It's relatively small. So you might want to be more front of border or possibly alpine area. But it's an extremely pretty thing. And I've kept it going all these years and passed it on. And this is another case in point where it's a really good plant, but I don't see other nurseries selling it, and I don't understand why.
I'd like to have it for the garden here. I tell you that just by looking at it there.
I'm basically like a personal plant shopper, aren't I? I facilitate Alan's personal shopping.
But we all know that the real reason Alan does his events is because all the nurseries come to him, and he then doesn't have to go to all the nurseries. They all bring their best and their most beautiful to Alan, who can then fill his garden. Now, he's not the only person who did this. There's a lady called Anne Crawley at Chippenham Park, and she did exactly this. You'd have all the nurseries come to her. And in particular, she bought lots of trees and shrubs from Bluebell Nurseries. And sometimes she would put in an order that was so big that it would took far more than Bluebell would ever take on the day. And that's why they kept on coming. But we thank you, Alan, for your wonderful support of small nurseries, because without people like you supporting small nurseries like us, we wouldn't survive.
No.
Well, that's very kind of you, Joe, but it's purely and utterly selfish on my behalf, because it's supporting. I've learned over the years that those small nurseries, and you are a case in point, because you described what the kind of plants that you've had today, and some of which have been taken on by other people and some haven't, like the rosemary, for instance, and the astrantia, which I covet like mad, hint. But, you know, that is the small nurseries and the small plant breeders and the people that love their plants above all else. That's where you find the most interesting garden plants. And I've learned this over the years. I mean, it's human nature. That's why plant fairs are so important, because you get hobby growers that perhaps are not entirely
financial. Look at the Cypripedium I produced earlier.
Absolutely.
You couldn't walk into any garden centre, any mainstream nursery, even 99.9% of small nurseries, and buy a lady slipper orchid.
No, exactly.
You couldn't. And yet your lovely Sandra, her husband obsessed with orchids, I can go and I can buy that plant, which is amazing.
I can see a lovely variegated thing over there.
What are you looking at? You're looking at the big thing at the back?
The big thing.
Are you really wanting to carry that?
Oh. Well, you brought it. God, it's a big pot, actually. You can see why I wanted this.
Okay.
Oh.
It's big, it's bright, it's gaudy. You can see why Claudie's wanted.
Yeah.
Okay.
You peep around it. Here we go.
Right, so it is.
The first look at that leaf, I thought it's a giant spider plant. But now
no,
I can see.
It's a Hemerocallis.
Yeah.
Or Hemerocallis, depending where you are.
Hemerocallis, please.
And it's beautifully golden striped. And it gets called Hemerocallis or Hemerocallis pulver. Golden Quanso. And this came to us many, many years ago from, this would be the early 90s. The Japanese had their boom before they had their 10-year bust. And in their boom, a lot of Japanese came over here and they were buying plants left, right, and center. And we just said, why don't you bring some plants back with you? And so then they started bringing plants with them. So in the early 90s, we've got a whole series of amazing plants from Japan. Including this fella. So there is a Hemerocallis fulva quanso with silver variegated leaves and double orange flowers. And then this is the golden quanso with double orange flowers, but golden variegated leaves. The silver one will take more sun and probably more shade as well. So it's easier to grow. This golden one, if it's too shady, you'll find that the gold can somewhat disappear. So I grow it in a place where it's getting sun or part shade as opposed to being really shady. It seems to be much slower than the silver one. So the silver one is quanso, this is golden quanso. It seems to be slower to increase. But when you get a good plant of it like this, it's pretty impressive. And
some of
these plants I've been growing for a very long time. And this particular one, every year I go around it and I take off the daughters around the outside. And a plant this big may only produce five. This produced me five little tiny daughter plants. I will grow those on for a year or so, and then they'll be available for customers. But, you know, the reproduction rate is still relatively slow.
got a centipede down here.
I've got everything in here. If you took this pot apart, it would have slugs, snails, ants, centipedes, millipedes, you know, woodlice, you name it.
My house is going to be full of some really interesting things after this.
Trust me, her house is going to be so full of ants. She doesn't realise this. Several of these pots have got ant nests in, and they're all making little ant lines for the corners of the room where they're going to set up new colonies.
My partner's going to be so pleased with me.
She's going to have to run around and clean this floor up. Because there's, well, everything's escaping everything.
Don't lose the centipede, though. I like to look at them, but I don't really want it on me. That's a lot of legs.
Yeah, they can't really bite you.
That's not that. It's just like the legs, the running.
Yeah, but don't get me on spiders. If I'm going to ever have an accident...
If you look at a centipede, the way it walks, its legs are like a wave going down the length of
its body. I just don't want it on my skin.
Now, if I'm going to crash my car, it's because a spider is going to come down on bread in front of my nose like this, and I will panic.
Isn't it deeply unhelpful as a gardener to not like spiders, though?
I don't mind the coloured ones. I don't mind the small brownie ones. I don't mind the jumping ones. The ones I hate are the really big, hairy-legged house spiders.
Yeah, they don't.
Absolutely hate.
I'm not good with any of them. They run
And I'm not
fast.
Particularly good with the garden spider, the common garden spider or orb spider.
I don't know.
No.
I don't mind spiders. I quite like spiders, actually.
Oh, God, I wish I did. I really do. I might go for therapy.
I just love I don't know which the spider is. I mean, it's a big old common spider. And it sits on plants and it makes nests and things. And then, you know, you see this sort of cluster of webbing and things. And if you tap it, all these little spiderlets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everywhere.
Well,
that's the common garden spider or orb spider, the one that makes the webs that we all see.
Yeah.
And then you touch it and they all sort of all spread out. And then if you do, they all collect.
Amazing. Yeah. I love those. Yeah. We should talk.
And we had, I'm trying to remember what the name is. We had a very unusual spider that's an alien spider that's spreading through. Is it the zebra spider?
Maybe.
And it's black and white and it's relatively large, very noticeable. And we had one of those on the nursery the other year. Right, what else have we got? We've got I've got a Deutzia. This is Deutzia gracilis, and it's a variegated form again that came from these Japanese visitors in the early 1990s. Very dwarf, maximum with me about 60 to 75 centimeters, which is about two and a half feet. Very, very dwarf, very bushy, as you can see. Variegated leaves with a cream margin to the leaf. I don't know if we can get one or two, possibly. We'll do a still or two for that. And then absolutely covered in white flowers.
Does it revert?
It does revert. Yeah, you do need to keep taking the green out. It prefers part shade and slightly damper places. So Deutzia generally is a big shrub that people grow, out in the sun or possibly in part shade. But this must have the part shade. And I love it. And I kept it going year after year after year. I just go over it once a year and tweak the green bits out and take cuttings.
I'm so pleased you're reaching over for this one now, because I haven't got this in this garden, but I put this in my mum's garden like 12 years
ago. Okay, so this is another one. At this time of year, this is one of my favourite plants. So this is... and this is one of those super questions people always ask you. What's your favourite plant? It's like, I don't have a favourite plant. What's your favourite snowdrop? Well, you know, I don't want to be mean, so I have to have a different favourite snowdrop every day, because they're like your children. If you actually say to them that you're one of them's your favourites, then they will hate you forevermore.
Well, it's the most expensive one. And then people will feel obliged to
question. Oh, what's your favourite snowdrop? It's like, oh, God. Different one every day. Anyway, this time of year... On today, this particular day, this is my favourite, Lunaria rediviva, or perennial honesty. And it has kind of lilac-y flowers that aren't necessarily as big as the normal honesty, but they are scented. They are wonderfully scented. It's a stout, robust perennial. I've seen it grow in really dry places, but in general, it prefers average or slightly damper places. And when the pods come in the autumn, they're not the normal rounded shape of the honesty that you know. They're much longer and thinner and pointed at each end. And there are a couple of variegated forms of this around. There's one called Parkway White with silver-edged leaves, which is reasonably growable, so it's not too bad. And then there's another one called Honor Bright with golden margined leaves. And I've been trying to get Honor Bright for a very long time. And the reason I've been trying to get on a bride is because I do know how to do it, and I do know how to propagate it, and I will be able to push it up to numbers where it's sensible. There's no point in having the most wonderful plant in the world and not giving it to somebody to propagate. It needs to, plants need to be shared. And if you want to sign me into some agreement which says that they'll all come back to you, that's fine.
I have tried to grow Rediva from seed, and the seed is failing to germinate. I've sowed some seed.
Fresh. Literally pick it off the plant and sow it straight away, because okay. They need a cold period.
They leave it outside.
They've got to have a cold period in the winter, and it could be that our winters are getting a little bit too mild. They're not getting enough cold, and then you just leave it alone and forget it. And if you sow them at the right time, you'll get most of them come up that first year. But I've got seed trays which are 3 years old, and they're still coming up. So the seed can sit in the ground for quite a long time.
I don't know whether you know, but I'm particularly fond of seed-grown dahlias. I looked at a seed tray yesterday, which I sowed last year, from a particularly nice, a campanulate form, I mean, sort of urn-shaped flowers, pink stripes. I liked it, good habit, lots of flowers. I sowed the seed, nothing happened. That was last year.
Mm.
That seed tray has been in my greenhouse, and I looked at it yesterday, and I thought, what? There's two little dahlia seedlings up. And that's taken a year for that to happen.
Dahlias normally germinate immediately. They're normally very fast germinators. The dahlia seed is not normally, it doesn't normally keep. So if you put it in a packet and have it in a packet for 3 years, they're usually gone. So that's interesting. But, seed of this, if once it's in the ground and it's getting what the conditions it needs, it will then germinate. But I found when I keep this seed in a packet over winter and sow it in the spring, it doesn't germinate anywhere near as well. And there's a whole series of other plants. There's all sorts of other plants where you need to sow it immediately, sow it fresh, straight away. They work so much better. And, that's when the plant is chucking them on the floor. That's when you chuck them on the floor.
There is one person that issues a catalogue of seeds to sow fresh. Yeah. And that's Derry Watkins from Special Plants. I mean, she has some interesting things.
Yeah.
And she has a list of plants that she sends, and she will send the seed to you at the optimum time for germination.
Yeah, there was another seed company not too far from you that would do a summer list of all the things like erythroniums and cyclamen and hellebores and all those kind of things that need to be sown fresh. And then they did a second list of autumn sown things.
Now, a rare treat, this podcast, because, my living room is absolutely full of plants, which I am flow mowing over.
And so, ants.
And ants. Possibly some centipedes, maybe some spiders.
Snails.
Marauding mollusks. Little silvery trails when I come down tomorrow morning. Thank you, Joe. But the FLOMO is strong. FLOMO being that fear of missing out you get about a flower or a plant. Aside from all of this, my FLOMO today is something I was... lucky enough to go for a little walk around King's College with the head gardener there, Steve Coghill, who we've been featuring on alongside Joe and Alan on the gardening show we've been doing. I'll just sneak a little apology about the music. It's out of our hands. Anyone who's been commenting about that, I'm sorry, but we'll just move on before I get fired. But Steve has been on the panel. He's wonderful and he's very keen to, show people around the college. So I went to see the meadow, absolutely awash with cowslips. But on the way to the meadow, I walked past some extraordinary Fritillaria acmepetala. They're just so big and glorious, those sort of green bells with maroony stripes, little kicked up petals at the bottom of the bell. And I've probably FLOMO'd about it before on this podcast, but I've never actually had that one. I've tried a few different fritillaries, not with a huge amount of success, to be honest. So acmepetala on my wish list, FLOMOing over that. Joe, what would you like to bring to the FLOMO party?
Well, the plant that I really covet and for many, many years was just a complete and utter myth. No one actually claimed to have this thing, although there were stories and rumours about this thing. I want a pure white peony tenuifolia. And I've now been shown a photograph, so I know it exists. So it's not just some mythological fantasy beast like a unicorn. There is actually genuinely a white peony tenuifolia, and I would seriously love to grow that.
Well, that's a good one. That's a seriously good FLOMO. Alan, the bar's been set high. Where are you going? What are you picking?
Well, the list. Sometimes you see a plant and it kind of speaks to you. And the one that's spoken to me today, I suppose, is the Rhodiola wallachiana. I mean, I just, It's a gaunt looking thing. It's ugly, beautiful. You know what I mean? Most people are going to look at it and say it looks half dead. Well,
it's got it character.
Absolutely. It speaks to me. And another thing that I'd just like to say is that a Fritillaria that I had from you, Joe, I can't remember, it's a pale peachy orange one. It hasn't increased marvellously, but I mean, I had it from you about 4 or 5 years ago. It has done wonderfully well in the fact that it keeps coming back.
Oh, is it like a Crown Imperial
does it,
type?
Does it have, is it a Crown Imperial type or
yes.
This high?
Yeah, yeah.
Palo di Flora with creamy bells with a slight orangey tint on the back of the bell. Relatively large bells.
Yes.
The side of the plant, and a very blue glaucous leaf.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, Palo di Flora, Fritillaria Palo di Flora. In the right spot, it can be quite happy, but it can be difficult to please. So, you know, you've obviously got it in the right place and it's doing okay. It's always slow.
Isn't that the case with all plants? You know, you suddenly walk, like you're walking down your path and with a smile of scenery and all the rest of it. I walk through this little piece of woodland. I just look at that and I think, my God, I've got it right. We've done something right because it's thriving. And then that's thrilling.
Well, isn't it? Aren't we lucky when we get it right and we get to enjoy these plants? Joe, absolutely. Thank you very much for hopping down the road and giving me not only Flomo, but various fauna to go along with the flora. I'll enjoy the clear up process after this podcast, but it has been an absolute riot. He's got his shopping list from Alan's personal shopping experience via the Talking Dirty podcast. Hopefully you're also thinking of doing your orders. Actually, you are mail order, aren't you? So people can get some bits and bobs.
Yeah, absolutely. But not everything I've shown is available. Some I'm not allowed to sell because of PBR. And, you know, it's just my private collection. But some things are available.
Right. Thank you so much for joining us for another wonderful planty extravaganza on Talking Dirty. Until next time. Happy gardening, everybody.
Happy gardening.
Bye.
Hey, 4Ds here. Just to say thank you so much for listening to Talking Dirty. You are now officially our favourite person. If you really liked it, please do subscribe because we'll be back for more plant-loving mayhem next week. And as you're our new favourite person, we don't want you to miss out. If you've got a question for Alan and the experts, you can email it to hello@getgardeningnow.co.uk. So happy gardening. And we'll see you, oh favourite person, next time.